Welcome to episode 25 of Digital Outbox. Who would have thought all those weeks ago we'd have got this far? Joining me tonight is Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hi, Ian.
Hello, hello. And also joining me tonight is Chris.
Hello.
Hi, Chris. Just thought I'd play your theme tune because I always threaten to never do.
I feel a warm and fuzzy.
That's not the first time you said that to me. So unfortunately, Shaquille can't make it tonight because he's otherwise engaged. So how are you two this week?
I'm all good. I've a bit of a rubbishy week. I don't know, just one of those bitty weeks.
Bitty.
Yeah, but not one of those weeks.
Well, it has been a deluge for some people in the country.
Yeah, it's been pissing down today.
Yeah, I have had some of the worst journeys to work ever. So I'm delighted it's the weekend, and I'm delighted I'm not going into work next week either. So that's even better.
Fantastic. Let's crack on with some news. Chris, T-Mobile staff sold our customer data.
They did indeed. Well, so it turns out, because it's the story broke earlier in the week that someone was going to be investigated, some criminal proceedings were going to be taken against a mobile firm, but the actual firm wasn't released who had done the deed. But then all the other mobile firms, other than T-Mobile, sort of came out and said, well, it's not me. until the sort of deduction meant that, yes, only T-Mobile was left. The details, I don't know how many details we've actually got at the moment, but basically T-Mobile are saying, we didn't know this, but some people within T-Mobile sold user data to other firms, which basically included so the user information plus when their contracts were going to be up for T-Mobile. And then, lo and behold, users got cold calls when their contract was coming up for renewal from other firms offering them different package deals.
Terrible.
And I guess it just shows how fragile our, data security can be.
Well, we'd spoken last week, didn't we, about the government wanting to track all our data and who watches the watchman or whatever. I'm sure Henry came out with a far better quote than that.
Who watches the watchers?
That's the one. Watchmen's a totally different thing entirely.
Yeah,
it was
a movie this year. Yeah,
it's a comic. Get it right.
All right. Okay.
It throws up really important questions about staff within a company probably need that information, so how do you stop them from passing on this information?
Yeah, well, one of the guys at work, he bought himself out of his T-Mobile contract to move to O2 and get an iPhone, and just around the time when his contract would have expired, he got quite a few calls talking about your T-Mobile contract's almost up. And he wondered at the time, why is he getting these calls from these other mobile firms? And he couldn't figure out how.
I guess that's the other thing in this story, isn't it? I mean, it has to be other mobile firms that have been buying this data. So
yeah, but is it through some sort of third-party database which might look pucker? And they'll say they have no idea where the information came from. It could have come from market research or whatever.
As a mobile firm, you're not going to question why another third-party firm has got the expiry dates of all these things. Well, I don't think anyone's going to come out smelling of roses.
It's not the big companies that do this. It's all your wee guys that run a wee mobile shop selling phones that kind of get hold of this data, and they're the ones that kind of phoning people up, and they're kind of selling on the contracts. You know, it's like it could be for anyone, any kind of any network at all, O2 or Orange or T-Mobile or anything. They're just into trying to sell the phone. So they're kind of third parties really, rather than the big players themselves that have got hold of this info, and they've probably got it for very cheap, very little money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bit I was surprised at was, and I don't know enough about it to 100% sure, but the news article at the time says that the most that they can find is £5,000 due to the kind of rules around the Data Protection Act.
Yeah. The maximum fine in data protection is £5,000, yeah.
And the Data Protection Act is very poorly done anyway, because if you say, right, I'm going to report you to the Data Protection Act, I'm on the telephone preference service or whatever, if you want to get someone for that, you have to find out the name of the person, full name, you have to have the postcode, and the phone number and the full name of the company from which they're calling. Now, trying to get that out of someone without them working out that you're going to get them reported and they're going you're going to get them fined is pretty hard work, as I have discovered myself.
So there's just generally been calls out of this whole story that the Data Protection Act isn't enough, and are we therefore looking to maybe get some more legislation around this to protect users' data? And I think the general consensus is yes, we need something.
Definitely. So we'll keep an eye on this one and see how it pans out over the next few months. Because I think that's how long it'll take to do the inquiry and stuff.
I think it might even take longer than that. I'm sure the information will trickle out eventually.
We'll all have beards by then and using Apple tablets.
Woohoo!
UK government to free OS maps, Henry.
Yeah, well, we were pretty nasty about Sir Tim Berners-Lee a few weeks ago when he admitted that the extra slashes after the HTTP colon were redundant, and we were slagging him off. But the government has used him as an advisor, and he's said that Ordnance Survey map data should be free to everybody from 2010. So credit where it's due. Good job, Sir Tim. Good job.
So, well done, Sir Tim. You can have your knighthood back.
And I think this is really great news for developers and things. Actually, the OS map data has always been kind of free if you were a small website, but there was always worries about how many users or how many views at a map did you have to start paying the license fees and things, which were actually quite considerable. It's quite something. So
yeah, I don't know the exact details of the number of views, but it certainly was basically you're all right if you're in a beta phase of something. As soon as you move out of that, then the licensing becomes pretty hefty.
Yeah, or if it was a small app you'd built almost for yourself or for a few friends, but it then took off, you're basically stuffed.
Yeah, and let's not forget that this is data that was collected using the money that we've all paid through our taxes.
Our money.
It was my money.
I think we said a few weeks back that we wanted to see this information opened up, and look what happens.
That's right. So, and shocking. It's worth saying that Sir Tim's advising on not just Ordnance Survey map data, but on all sorts of other data that he's trying to encourage the government to open up and make free. Let's hope the next thing's the postcode database from the Royal Mail. That would be a real boon if that does
open up. Then I think we should be saying more and more things that we want, because obviously they're listening to us. They're subscribed to Digital Outbox.
We can influence. So from one OS to another, but this time it's Chrome. Chrome OS was officially announced by Google yesterday. I don't know if you guys had a chance to catch up on the events from their
briefly.
Show.
Had a quick look through what was going on.
Yep. So the basically, it's as long as you connect to the web, and as long as you're connected to the web, this looks like the operating system for you. And they're focusing on three things: speed, simplicity, and security. And I guess a couple of things that caught my eye was that they're aiming to get from switch on of the hardware to your actual connection in less than 10 seconds.
That's so
impressive. The demo video yesterday was about 7 seconds to go to get to the login screen, another 3 seconds to log into the application, and they're trying to get that faster.
Which for the market they're going for, which is netbooks and small to portable devices, is definitely. I think I moaned at everyone going on and on about boot up times for other OSs, Windows 7 versus Mac OS. But in this situation, I would say that there is a legitimate need to be able to turn on your device, get onto the web quickly, and maybe and log off as well really quickly.
No, definitely. I mean, you think of how long a mobile phone takes to boot up these days from cold, and you may as well go away and have a cup of coffee and come back 3 days later, because it's you kind of forgotten that you wanted to actually phone, so who you wanted to phone by the time the thing's actually ready. So.
That's just you getting old.
Yeah, it probably is. You're right.
So I guess there's kind of 5 takeaway points, which I have dubiously copied from another website, but I will go through now. So the browser is the operating system. So it's all built around Chrome. It fixes itself. So it's always being updated. So as you're connected, it's always downloading, I guess, little patches and updates in the background. All the apps are web apps. There's absolutely no installs at all. So you're not installing applications. You're not installing drivers. And also, I guess, the thing that actually caught me out, and I didn't realise to quite far in, it won't install on current hardware. So it's only going to support solid-state hard drives, which makes sense. They're chasing after this, you know, switch on and it's there. And it really is meant for netbooks, as Chris mentioned earlier. So it looks like I'm guessing we're going to see actual Chrome-specific hardware coming out to support this.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. They have to conform to certain specifications, and especially initially, because there will need to be driver support for items, things like digital cameras that you can plug in.
Yeah, so they showed that in the video, plugging a digital camera and the photos appear on in a kind of window.
And I would imagine, as it's an open source project, I think others will, you know, they'll adapt the code so it can run on maybe, you know, normal hard drive, whatever. But certainly, I guess what Google wants to get across here is this is for portable devices, for ultimate speed to get where you want to go on the net, and therefore solid state hard drive is surely the obvious choice.
Yeah,
or even just kind of flash memory, I presume, you know, that you don't really need even the bigger amount of data of a big flash of a solid state drive. Do you
I assume that it doesn't require that much space on your actual hardware.
I was just going to say a couple of things I took away from it as well, that I'm still not convinced that the cloud is the be all and end all. Everybody's saying this is it. Everybody's going to move to the cloud, and there's still certain things that I'm only going to be able to do locally. You know, so could we record video to the cloud right now? Certainly not with our broadband infrastructure.
No, definitely not.
And maybe in some parts of the world you've got the upload speed and the reliability that you can do. I kind of doubt it. Even when I look at the upload speeds we've got here, still very low. You know, and that to me would have to change. You know, I would rather take a drop in download speed to get a higher upload speed right now.
So the So for me, I mean, I've got big questions over this. And yes, for just everyday web stuff, generally, yes, you only need to get onto a website and you've got all your apps, you know, for your basic productivity. Mm. For more advanced productivity when you do need storage, so maybe some more sort of in-depth photo editing and things like that, they're pretty much just saying, well, that's not what this device is for. It's kind of almost a cop out that for me. It'd be interesting to see how useful this will be, because I still do use applications even on the move that would benefit from having local storage, but they have said that there is no local storage. So the things like they've saying, yeah, you can play your music through web browsers and all that, but how do I store my music collection? Do I put that on the cloud, and does that raise multiple issues from providers? You know, are you allowed to upload your music collection into the cloud?
I think they're looking at things like Last.fm and Spotify, where you don't have to have your music unless you made your own music and you wanted to store your own music.
Yeah, but Last.fm and Spotify do come with downfalls. I think that's exactly what they're kind of saying, that there's applications that label you to music.
There was definitely, watching the presentation, there was definitely, I think, rose-tinted glasses. You know, there was a whole lot of assumptions, even things like, well, thanks Microsoft, you've built us Excel online. And it's like, yeah, but it still takes a minute to open my file, thanks very much.
Yeah, I mean, it's more future-looking. I think it'll speed up and get better over time, and the benefits of it might improve. But so they even said, you know, 90% of the time we're using our web browsers at the moment, which is probably quite accurate.
That is,
But if that 10% that you're not using the web browser is kind of integrated into the time that you are using your web browser, then suddenly you can't do the things you're doing anyway.
Sure.
I think the issue for me is this is kind of like a portable device, and a portable device, you don't always have the internet connection when you're moving around,
no.
And yet you really need the internet connection for this. So you kind of get a bit of there's just a bit of a problem there where, you know, what do you do when your connection goes down? You know, you're kind of stuffed, really.
If you think back, I mean, it was 2-3 years ago, they were talking about the Google doing the kind of blanket San Francisco coverage, and there's been talk of other places as well, but we don't have that here.
Well, Swindon's just been announced this week as being the first mesh.
I ain't going to move to Swindon.
No, and until that does become, until wireless becomes global or just very omnipresent, you know,
or some sort of, even the 3G, I mean, I could turn around and say, well, I could use 3G, you know. So if they were doing specific hardware that comes with 3G support, I can see it working. I can actually see this more like it's almost like the secondary device. It's almost like the Apple tablet, or if you look at the Crunch Pad, this kind of idea of a really cheap, it's only a screen, lets me do the basic stuff. You know, I'm sitting at the TV and I want to do some basic things. Thanks very much.
It's definitely a device that can be, yeah, integrated into other objects as well, I guess, for more convergent going forward. So, yeah, you might have a little device in your lounge that you wouldn't have had before. You might have had the laptop before, but this is sort of even quicker for everything you need in the lounge.
Yep.
Yeah, it'd be great. You could have some great remote control kind of devices and apps and things as well, which would be really nice.
Definitely. So there is a way to actually try this. Google have got the Chromium OS website up, so you can actually download it and compile it yourself and build the operating system and get it installed somewhere. Other alternatives, and I'll put the links in the show notes, there's a couple of sites now have a VMware image that you can download. So if you're using Fusion on the Mac, or if you're using the I think it's called just VM Player, on the PC, you can download that VMware image and give it a try, and it's still very rough. It really just is, you know, the Chrome browser plus a few bits and pieces, and it's not got a lot of the stuff they were even demoing at yesterday's launch.
So it's typical Google then, really, kind of.
It's a year away, you know.
That's exactly it. This is because it's open source is the only reason it's out now.
Yeah.
It's they said this is a year ahead of any kind of production release.
But it's nice to see. I think it's nice to see something that is actually very different to the operating systems we've got right now.
I think it looks great, but I'm still reserving judgment whether it will actually prove useful.
You take those splinters out your backside and start talking about digital economy, Bill.
Crikey, yes. So we've had the Queen talking to us today about three strikes, or not today, sorry, earlier in the week about the three strikes. in the Queen's speech, it was laid out that, yes, the three strikes is still in the digital economy bill.
Boo.
Shaq's only got two left, though. Let's remember that.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yes, he's been booted once, hasn't he? There's no talk of the broadband tax, so the tax on phone bills to...
Well,
help.
It's mentioned, but it's seemingly coming in the pre-budget announcement coming.
Yeah, I think it's 2010 after. Yeah. It's after the election, isn't it? Basically, so that's where that's going to start appearing and rearing its ugly head, so that Welsh people can have the internet. And then the other thing in the bill was any game aimed at users over or gamers over 12 will have to have a game rating, so an age rating on it.
I didn't know that wasn't compulsory at the moment.
It does seem a bit. Does seem a bit bizarre that Modern Warfare's got 18 plastered all over it, but it's like, who cares?
I think games have had 15 and 18 for a while. Maybe they're just saying it needs.
They have,
more fine-grained.
But what it seems to have, and it wasn't apparent to me, but what's come out of this is that it's not compulsory. It's not a you need to check for age and don't sell it, like they should be doing with movies.
For 18 it was illegal. I don't know. Well, maybe it's not illegal. Maybe it's just you get fined if you sell an 18 game to an under 18.
Don't know.
Or maybe it's just voluntary.
That kind of thing sounds illegal to me. If you get fined for not doing something, that sounds like it's illegal. Am I just being picky here?
Maybe.
Yeah. No. I think it's a good point, well made, especially for a Friday night when I think we're all a bit tired.
Yes. So Mandelson's pushing on with his three strikes rule, even though it's kind of universally disliked and been picked
apart.
I was waiting for some sort of Barry Manilow song getting sung there, and I'm so glad you didn't.
And even European Union is saying pretty much that they're not sure whether this is actually legal, and that they would probably implement rulings that said that it's not and that wouldn't be able to be enforced in the UK. So it's interesting to see where this goes, but it seems like it's pushing ahead. There's been a lot of outcry about it, certainly in the tech community. People, you know, just say, like I say, picking holes in it and saying how it's just not going to work.
Yeah,
it's punishing the downloaders rather than punishing the providers, and all sorts of different things.
Yeah, but there doesn't seem to be much political noise about it.
No,
which makes me think it's just going to be passed at some point.
Well, I think so. I think the thing that we've got to remember is that, that the UK has a huge economy in the in music, in creating music. The big music companies are making lots of money for the government in terms of taxes and things, and you know they have a bigger voice than most of us, it seems like, which is a bit of a shame, but that seems to be the way it goes these days.
I think with tweaks to it, it could still be a reasonable thing to do. With tweaks, for example, saying there's got to be actual judicial review of it rather than just a complaint. A complaint should never be enough to ban someone from using something like the internet.
No, definitely not.
No, definitely not.
So with tweaks, I think, you know, that there could be something that could be rescued out of it. But if it goes through without tweaks, then it just seems, well, I don't know how it's ever will ever get through like that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, one to keep an eye on. Next up is Twitter Ad Network, Henry.
Yeah, there's a new ad network for Twitter called Adly, ad.ly, which is a kind of a cross between an affiliate network type thing where you get where you'd get paid for promoting certain products or things on your website, and traditional ads like the Google your Google AdWords type thing, or so what this does is it inserts ads once a day into your Twitter stream, and you can. But the publisher, you get to choose which ads you want to put in. So it's quite an interesting concept in terms of advertising. And they're really targeting the guys with thousands and thousands of followers. So you're like your Stephen Fry's and people like that. And you can actually set your own price as well. So they'll give you, say you give you a proposed price per ad or click through or whatever, and then you can choose to ignore that and make it a bit higher or lower or whatever. So it'd be interesting to see how this kind of works out and see if people actually go for it, because it's like you're kind of making a recommendation. But you get paid for it. So
yeah, that just seems wrong. I think if I started figuring out that those were coming in certain, if people I was following were doing it, I think I'd just unfollow.
I think, but then again, there's people. There's users that people follow maybe because they're interested in the celebrity or whatever.
No, exactly. But
that won't unfollow and will get exposed to that. To be honest, what I thought about this idea was, I wish I'd come up with that. It's a very, very slick way of monetizing Twitter. I'd be surprised if Twitter I don't think they can come down it, but I'm surprised Twitter aren't involved in this, because everyone's been looking for ways that Twitter could monetize themselves, and this is a great solution. Anyone can become a publisher. You can sign up yourself and say that I'll put out an advert in my feed, but yeah, obviously you're not going to get any money.
Yeah, you get fractions of a penny because depending on the number of followers that you've got. So
yeah.
I'm sure it's balanced. And I think as an advertiser, you can choose which publishers you want to go out on. And obviously choose the top few, you're reaching, you know, 1.5 million users straight away.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. If I was Twitter, I'd be looking at some way of stopping that. Because there's a thing that there's no adverts on the website, and I was reading something the other day, and they're saying they don't want to clutter it, they don't want to kind of spoil what they've got right now, and something like this is the potential to spoil for me. You know, I look at it as the same as Facebook were trying something where if you didn't uncheck a certain box somewhere, you know, your face could appear on an advert recommending it to your friends.
Yeah,
and it's like, what's all that about?
Yeah, but you didn't get any of the money for that, though, on the Facebook.
No,
thing.
But
at least you're getting paid for this.
I don't care. I'm using these sites to keep in touch with people, not to advertise products, apart from Digital Outbox, of course.
Of course. I think the thing is, though, you know, some Twitter users are tweeting about particular topics and particular things.
I know.
And they may actually be at the moment kind of not... pushing products in a big way, but there may be things that they do actually they are quite keen on and would be quite keen to endorse.
But they're making that choice, whereas this sounds like I'll let you advertise and just blast out an advert to my followers no matter what it is.
No, it's not like that. No, you get to choose. You get to choose which advert's go out, because that's what I mean.
But that as a follower, you don't get any choice in looking at it.
No, but that's not as bad. That's not as bad as I thought it was. I thought it was just basically you get a random advert, like a Google advert type thing. Just
no,
appears.
You have to approve. You have to approve the advert that goes out on your stream.
You approve the ones that go out on your stream. So
that's
so
not
it's
so bad.
It's much more like an affiliate kind of link that you would put on your website to say, you know, well, whatever you want to.
Or you've found a website you really like and you're saying recommended.
Exactly.
I mean, if someone's got a stream that's worthwhile listening, you know, subscribing to, then this won't affect my, you know, subscription of that stream. But if it's someone I don't really care about or is just whatever, they are getting unsubscribed straight away if they start pushing adverts to me.
Well,
I mean,
it's only once a day, isn't it? It's only once a day. And if you're tweeting quite a lot, then it probably gets lost in the
noise.
In the noise, yeah.
Like I say, I wish I'd come up with the idea because I think someone's going to make some money out of this and not just the publishers.
Well, particularly if Google or Microsoft or Twitter decide to buy them up.
Yeah, I think Twitter would be wise to buy them, I think.
Speaking of Microsoft and making money, the behemoth that is Office 2010 beta has launched this week, Chris.
Yes, yeah, so they've put their beta out. Their bloatware seems like it might have bloated.
Oh, it's massive.
I haven't even managed to download it yet because basically I tried to sign up for it today and the website was either down or over being pummeled. But it's more of the same.
Microsoft don't like you, Chris. I think that's what you'd be blacklisted.
Yeah, that's more than likely. But so I will download it at some point this week, I hope, and I will try and report back. But it looks more of the same. I'm still running 2003 because I think that was the.
Well, if you really want to try it, the news groups have got a copy. The torrent sites have got a copy, and I think they'll be far better to get it from there than it would be from Microsoft.
Mm.
He says rather shadily illegally. I should put on my hushed PC type voice. I'm not here. The only thing was a couple of good points comes in 64-bit. Way. There's 5 different packs, which is when will they learn? Ribbons everywhere.
Where did you find 5? Was 5 packs based on being 64-bit versions and 32-bit versions as well?
No, I don't think it was.
Because I only saw 3.
Oh, well,
I saw a home, professional, and a professional plus.
Okay, well,
I thought it was the different colours that they were looking at because it's got different colours in the logo. They thought, oh, we'll have to have different colours in the patch.
I bow to your Microsoft knowledge.
Thank you.
So the ribbon is everywhere. I don't know if you guys like the ribbon or not, but every app now has the ribbon.
Because I'm still working 2003, I've never had to use the ribbon.
Yeah, get with the picture. It's 2010, man. It's a new decade.
But
in a couple of months' time.
I don't think I'm missing out on anything by having not upgraded to the last one.
No, you're not.
Really?
You're not missing out on anything.
On a day-to-day basis, I've never been needed to use anything. I've got the DocX extension to 2003, and I think actually Outlook was 2003 was the last version that actually displayed HTML emails properly because they buggered that up, didn't they?
Mm. Another interesting thing was SharePoint is now included as part of the Office suite. So they've got some SharePoint Workspace 2010 component, which I'll be interested in.
I was going to say, was it just integrating with it rather than actually being supplied as part of it?
No, it looks like it's been supplied as part of it. And if you want the full Office 2010 experience, you seemingly do need SharePoint.
We've got something called SharePoint Workspace, yeah.
Yes. So I will be hopefully downloading over the weekend and giving it a thrash on your old Windows 7 VMware image.
Yep, I should do the same. But if anyone does want to go, then obviously there's the link in the show notes to find out where to download from.
So a couple of gaming stories. We mentioned Facebook was coming to the PS3 last week. I think I just mentioned it briefly. And it's arrived. So the firmware update came out either Tuesday night or Wednesday. I have installed it. I am completely underwhelmed. It basically allows you to link your profile to your PS3 profile to your Facebook profile and then tweet when you're doing well in games. Not tweet, send to Facebook when you're doing well in games.
Super.
Or if you've got a new trophy. This just looks like spam and noise.
So you're not even whelmed, Ian. You're underwhelmed.
Just totally under. just under. It sucks a bit. I mean, I didn't think too much of the Xbox, Facebook, and Twitter apps, which all came out officially this week. But this is worse.
So this doesn't even let you look at your timeline and things like that?
No, nothing like that.
So it literally is just a way of putting onto your status.
Yep.
Okay. So it's not really Facebook integration as much as just status updates.
It's spam and noise, I think, sums up the feature and the story.
Right.
Some more rumours. So I think Sony were doing a press conference today, and the Register reported that in a couple of their slides, they confirmed that next year, 3D gaming will be coming to the PS3. So one of the slides showed that they highlighted that 3D gaming is an advantage of the PS3, and then they confirmed that it would be coming in 2010, and all units will be firmware updatable to support this.
Wow.
And there's nothing more said, but Sony over the year have said they're going to focus a lot more on 3D. They're really
pushing it next year, aren't they? We've heard all about their TVs. In fact, most of the technology shows have been kind of bombarded with 3D technologies, and this as well. They're clearly going for it big style.
And I think today there was at one of their shows today, it was a 200-inch or 280-inch 3D TV was shown. With some massive TV. Well, Sean, I can't find it now because obviously I want to find it. And like that's the way these things kind of work. But
have you been watching any of the Channel 4 3D this week?
No. I've been kind of stuffed with work, so I've not really seen any of it. Was it any good?
I literally flicked over and went, whoa, my eyes have gone wrong. and then flicked back again. But no, so I haven't watched any of it in 3D. But it's interesting to see that a terrestrial TV station is devoting that much time to showing 3D programs.
Sky's 3D channel is still allegedly going to launch next year.
Well,
I think we'll see it. Whether it's going to be that exciting, don't know yet.
Well, it's no use because they'll have missed the Panto season. I mean, the whole thing of 3D is so that you can say, he's behind you.
Oh, I'm going to groan. Yeah, we need that sound effect.
Speaking of groans, our final story this week is from the Microsoft Store.
Yeah.
So
hide me now.
Some of Chrissy's friends doing a 4-minute dance in the store.
Oh dear. They were boys, weren't they?
Boy, oh boy, did I cringe.
Do you know what it looked like from when I watched the YouTube video, where you can look at the YouTube video in our show notes, the links there. It looked like they were trying to do that kind of T-Mobile thing where, you know, suddenly all these spontaneous dances happen. But it was all the employees. It wasn't any sort of customers.
No.
And,
the customers just were all completely ignoring them. It's fantastic. They're all thinking, what's this going on? You know?
There was one old guy who kind of seemed to come in and join in. I don't know if he was paid.
Well, whatever. Utter fail. Everything Microsoft doing advertising-wise at the moment is utter fail. And it kind of makes you think, have they got a policy of utter fail? Because that means that they get more coverage from it.
Yeah, it was my idea. Windows 7 was my idea.
Yeah, what? God. Anyway, watch it, but be prepared to cringe and turn off after 2 seconds.
It made me chuckle.
Yeah, it's very funny. Particularly the guy stealing the stuff.
That's a wrap for all our news this week.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
Wow.
There's no Apple because there's no Shaq.
Amazing.
I actually did want to mention the fantastic reviews, the iMac, and what is it, the quad i7 chip has been getting this week. I am so tempted to push the button on that one.
Hey, you're weakening, are
you? Oh, it needs to be bought. It really does need to be bought.
They do look amazing.
Like I say, you're going to do it, so you might as well just go for it.
No, it's...
Anyway.
Next year.
What I say, I think I mentioned this earlier, but my iPhone started to rattle, and I don't know why.
Have you dropped it?
I don't think I've dropped it, but I have been on a stag do since it started rattling.
Are you sitting it?
Who knows, maybe.
Are you a front pocket guy or a back pocket guy?
Front pocket.
So maybe it's got lost among the folds. Anyway. Let's move on to some picks. Henry, why don't you take us through yours?
My pick is something called Emotion, which is a Mac app, which it's pretty difficult to explain what it does, but it basically, you can draw all sorts of fancy, funny pictures on the screen with kind of particles that kind of zoom out and zoom back in again and fall to the floor and come back. You can use all sorts of input devices from tablets to Wii remotes to all sorts of things. It sounds a bit rubbish, actually. But you, if you go to the show notes, if you go to the show notes and you click on the link there, you'll be able to see some of the videos of some of the stuff you can do. It's a lot of fun. Absolutely no practical use at all, but a lot of fun to play around with.
Often the best picks have no practical use.
To be fair, you did say it's difficult to describe, and it did live up to that. So thanks for that.
But I should be looking at those videos afterwards. I won't press play now, otherwise
you'll disappear from Skype.
Yes, exactly.
So my pick this week is an iPhone app called Reader. I've always wanted a really good Google Reader app on the iPhone. I used to use Byline. And Byline actually works quite well. And it's been very handy for when I'm away on my travels, and I can get all my articles synced in and then read them at a later date. But it takes forever. It really is slow at updating and refreshing. So I picked up on a recommendation from somebody on Twitter for an app called Reader, and it works really well. Really nicely designed. Very quick to sync. And yeah, that's about it. So if you use Google Reader, you want to use it on your iPhone, this app's £1.19, and I think it's a bargain. Really, really nice to use.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Google's got their the Reader's an online enabled app for the iPhone, isn't it?
It is. But I just find the app itself compared to the website is still superior.
Yeah, I think most apps they've got that bit more focus, haven't they, about them than websites.
Yeah. Although I did notice they've updated Google News to be a far slicker web app, and it's actually really nice. So I've actually got that as a little icon now on the iPhone. It's really improved. I think it only came out on, it's either Wednesday or Thursday that they kind of pushed the button on that, and it's really, really nice. So just the Google News site itself has been updated. So there you go. That's almost two picks the price of one.
Very good. And do you find the Google Reader does load your feeds much, much quicker?
Yeah, well, this Reader app does, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I should actually point out the spelling. It's R-E-E-D-E-R. And it's far, far quicker than Byline. Byline would just go off into a tangent sometimes. It would just take forever. And I just find the Reader a lot better.
See, I gave up on NetNewsWire for the similar kind of reason that it just seemed to take ages to get stuff from.
I tried NetNewsWire and I think Shaquille, I don't know if he plugged away with it. Now, what I didn't like as well is kept on changing how it worked. You know, first it was a paid app, then it was a free app. And then it went to a paid app again. And that was just, I'm just talking about an iPhone. So people that originally paid for it were hacked off, it went free. And then they charged for a different app again with the same name. And it's like, what are you doing? And they kept on changing how it worked, and it syncs with Google Reader and all that good stuff. So, but yeah, Byline's still a good app, but I definitely recommend Reader. Chris, your pick this week.
My pick this week is called Color Scheme Designer, and it is a website. So you go to colorschemedesigner.com, and basically it's for those of us who have to either design websites maybe or develop user interfaces where you need to get a nice color palette going, basically, but don't really have the eye for color. This site is focused on you pick one color and you can then generate a whole color palette for your sites or interfaces based on that. And it's just the amount of fine grain control you get over exactly what kind of the palette it comes up with, and you get visual feedback exactly what it's going to look like and how it's going to work. You can adjust the settings so it shows you what your color palette that you've sort of chosen will look like for people with different visual impairments, and then it outputs at the end of the day all the you know, the XML or HTML CSS that you need to, well, the color codes effectively that you've chosen. Very focused bit of kit. I find it useful in some of the things I do, and so I thought I'd pass it on.
That's a fantastic pick. That might be your best pick that exists so far.
That's raising the bar. Yeah. I mean,
it's certainly better than the ones that don't exist. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Well, to be honest, the one that didn't exist was actually a really good pick.
It just didn't exist.
Well, it's actually real nice because I don't know if you've ever heard of a site called Cooler, K-U-L-E-R, which is from Adobe.
Is that a similar idea?
Well, not as much, but it actually it has colours that complement each other, and there's always, but it's almost got like a dictate rating where you can, people can rate other people's colour combinations.
Well,
and
I mean,
think there was a little app, I think it was a little Adobe Air app that you could download, and it was just a nice way of getting some complementary colours.
I mean, this offers you lots of different ways of getting complementary colours. You can choose whether it's, you know, if you know about the colour wheel, you can choose whether the colours are opposite or whether they're kind of gently balanced next to. And then once you've done that initial control, you can even get deeper into it as exactly how contrasting the colours are and all sorts. And so it's so focused.
It is very, very good. Great pick.
Take a look, and if you like it, donate.
And that's us for this week.
Amazing.
A far shorter show.
Unbelievable.
No Apple news, but which kind of saddens my heart.
You know, that just means that they're keeping stuff back for either a Christmas announcement or New Year.
Well, there was one non-news Apple news, which was that the tablet's delayed. But seeing as the tablet's never been announced, I find it kind of bizarre that the news is it's delayed.
The rumours of the rumoured delay.
And there's an update to screen size. It's now a 9.7 inch screen.
Oh, no, good grief.
I think what's happened to all these 0.1s of an inch? Yeah, I don't know.
Every 0.1 counts, as you should know.
I do, yes.
So if you want to send us some feedback, we've got our wonderful website, which is a bit sluggish this week thanks to our hosts being a bit tardy with their network and bandwidth. But you can see us on www.digitaloutbox.com. We'd love your comments, info@digitaloutbox.com, or just drop a comment on the actual post on the website. And we're on Twitter at Digital Outbox. We'd also, if you want to leave us a little audio comment, Skype us up on Digital Outbox. And we'd actually like to see a few more people leave us their thoughts, good or bad. Chris, where can we find out more about you?
My blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk, and I'm also on Twitter as CheesyUK.
Henry.
I'm Talk Rhubarb on Twitter, and you can find me at talkrhubarb.com/wordpress.
And my blog is ind.net, and I'm on Twitter as Schweeper. Thanks for your time. Hopefully you join us next time. Bye now.
See you next time.
And there you go.
Wow. We did it.
See if Bomb, exactly 8 o'clock. See if Bomb had written us a shorter intro. if he'd done that 7 seconds one that we talked about. That would have been well under 42 minutes.
Amazing. I don't know if you noticed at the beginning, but we started the record and then I realised I hadn't got my headset in. And the reason I realised was because my microphone was picking up the sounds, and I was scrabbling around going, oh no. So I actually didn't hear my intro music. I just whacked in my ears a headset at the second you were saying, oh, I'm glad you like that or something. So if they're scrabbling around noises at the beginning, that's what that was.
What an amateur.
That was wasted, Ian. You'll have to do it again next week.
I know. I'm gutted, actually. I took seconds preparing that.
I'll listen back to it, so I'll get it the second time. I can't move my mouse is tied.